Let's just bring this work session of the HES committee to order. And we're working on House Bill 23. Representative Lincoln, Representative Gonzalez, Representative Sherry Davis, and Representative Pat Carney are present. 11:10. And the first person that we have lined up to testify is Eric McDowell. Eric, are you ready to enlighten us?
Sure.
Thank you. Please give your name for the record.
My name is Eric McDowell. President of the McDowell Group. We are economic and market researchers and consultants.
Eric, our concern is, I'm sure you understand, is how you arrived at the numbers. And we've been told that your numbers represent the cost of education in the various areas rather than the cost of living in the various areas. We'd like to hear how you came up with these numbers.
Okay. I'll explain. We were approached 2 years ago by the legislature to conduct a study of the differences in the cost of education in the 54, 55 public school districts. One of the reasons we were approached is we had significant background in cost differential studies by using the household cost of living study that we had conducted in 85. And that was the result of 2,500 household interviews, 2,000 surveys of prices in 2,000 retail outlets throughout Alaska and in the Seattle-Tacoma area. I'll talk about that study for just a moment because it is important in the differentials. Formerly, and not many people were aware of this, the existing education differentials were based on older studies of the household cost of living in Alaska. And those former studies, I think 1972 and 1976, dealt only with housing and food. And unfortunately, housing and food only represented about half of what it cost, although they were incomplete studies, small samples, a lot of problems. We were asked to cure that with a fairly massive effort, and we covered all areas of the cost of living, all categories. We stuck very strictly to CPI methodology and so forth. So the net result of our 6 months effort was the most comprehensive data on household cost of living. So that was 1985, where we got behind for a moment. We suggested educational differentials until then were based just on those old studies, which there were a lot of problems with. We suggested that we look at all costs associated with school district operations. And that included non-personnel and personnel costs. So in 1988, we did another survey of school district costs, and we looked at the professional and technical services the districts have to have, legal, audit, in-service training, etc. We looked at communications of all kinds. We looked at insurance, different types of travel, utilities, which is a big item, services such as equipment repair and maintenance, and then the supplies, materials, and media, which is a big category, teaching supplies, textbooks, office supplies, maintenance, janitorial, and equipment. And that was our non-personnel market basket. Between, let's say, in the most remote school districts, about 55% of operating costs are personnel, and about 45% are non-personnel costs that I just listed. In the most urban districts, where costs are lower, personnel costs can comprise as much as 85% of the school district budgets, with 15% being non-personnel costs. And that varies throughout Alaska. We studied each district's cost allocations and saw how that varied. So since the district's costs are both personnel and non-personnel, we put the two studies together and said that for the portion of your budget that you spend on personnel, this differential applies. And for the portion of your budget that is non-personnel, the non-personnel differential applies. You weight them and combine them, and that gives you an overall comprehensive cost differential for operating school districts. We feel that this hadn't been done before. We felt that it was a good choice by the legislature to say, yes, we would like cost of education based on what it costs to educate rather than what it costs to operate a personal household. And so, as expected, there were some differences between the old differentials, which were based on something else, and the new differentials that are actually based on the cost of educating. And I could go on at length about various techniques that were used, but suffice it to say, let's say on the household personnel market basket, we used in excess of 300 items, very carefully weighted and selected based on consumer price index methodology. Secondly, on the school district market basket, we had about 40 specific items selected, different types of insurance and so forth, and we learned what everyone purchased and how they purchased it, and then looked at the costs of that. So we feel that what you have before you is your first data on operating school districts that accurately reflects what's actually going on out there. Research isn't perfect to insinuate that you can accurately get to within a point or a tenth of a point of what it actually is not realistic. But what we did learn is that it's much more accurate. We also learned that similar districts were amazingly close in their differentials. And if you have districts that are in small communities but have highway access to major centers, the costs were within a point or two of each other. If we dealt with remote districts in the western regions, we found that those costs were amazingly similar within a point or two. And in fact, one of our recommendations was to consider just a handful of groupings because those costs are so strikingly similar. For example, the cost of both living and of operating school districts throughout urban Alaska entirely, and that's the Rail Belt, Juneau, Kenai, Ketchikan, is essentially the same. It's within a point or two, and most of that difference is due to some people charge sales tax and some don't. So urban Alaska, the cost of educating is essentially the same. In the most remote districts, it's essentially the same. In the small districts along the highways, it's essentially the same. And I think that the findings actually surprise us in that respect. So we found that under the old numbers, if a district was significantly different using the old numbers than the district next door, there was probably a problem, and we uncovered some data problems in the old numbers. So yes, there's adjustments. Yes, politically there's winners and losers. I hope that the last few minutes I spent gives you some idea of how we arrived at this, some idea of the meticulous extent to which the research was done to nail down what is a very difficult area of research. And I'll close with that and be open to any questions that you might ask.
Representative Davis?
Mr. Chairman, I guess the question I'd have for you, Mr. McDowell, would be, and this may be a loaded question, I don't know, depending, considering your business, but...
I've been asked them before.
I'll bet. would you assume that these differentials, even though the study is several years old, are still valid and accurate, or would you assume that one would have to do a study like this fairly frequently and redo all of these things in order to determine the accuracy of this?
Well, I'll answer the frequency part of it. One of the things that we found when we researched cost of living, we went back 20 years and looked at all different studies, most of them lousy. Now, I don't say that out of professional pride, but when you're looking at cost of living and you only do food and housing and you leave out transportation, medical, and everything else, it's not. But even with the differences in methodology and the imperfections, they tended to roughly agree. And the real difference in cost between Anchorage and other places, that difference doesn't seem to fluctuate a whole lot over time. Yes, it fluctuates so that a study that's 5 or 10 years old probably doesn't precisely reflect what's happening today. But in that, this geographic differential study, which was the 85 one, we did recommend that maybe looking at it only once every 5 years. You don't need to do it every year. The differences don't change that dramatically. Give you an example. Fairbanks. Before the pipeline, Fairbanks did not have good retail efficiencies. There wasn't a lot of competition. It didn't have a lot of chain stores. It just wasn't big enough. What the pipeline did was turn Fairbanks into a mature, competitive urban environment that where the cost of living are within a point or two of Anchorage. 20 years ago, it cost about 8% more, 6% more to live in Fairbanks than in Anchorage because of those inefficiencies. Today, no. And that's one of the dramatic changes. Same thing went for Matsu and Kenai. You went from almost rural villages and expensive, inefficient retail sectors to chain stores in those areas. So that urban maturity has leveled out any differences among the urban areas of Alaska. So that's a change that you'll see. I suspect that were you to restudy the household cost of living today, it might be a little bit different because of the recession. The recession affected different areas of Alaska in different ways. So you'll probably find a few points difference now if you study it again. But even here, we didn't recommend looking at it every year. Number one, it's expensive to do it. Number two, numbers don't change that much. So yes, they've changed, but probably not a whole lot.
Representative Gonzalez, did you have a response?
Yes, Mr. McNall. I got several questions of concern, really. You mentioned the word accurately. Mr. McDonald, I really doubt that right now at this time, 1991. I think what we've done here is a terrible injustice to areas such as the Bush areas. You're talking about Fairbanks, Mr. McDonald. Fairbanks, I don't know if you ever lived there or if you've gone there or how the study came about.
Yes, I lived there. I lived there several years.
Right now, the difference in living in Fairbanks and Anchorage are way, way more different than you're stating right now. You do have several outlets in Anchorage that are, you know, for instance, the outlets that have Costco's and those things that we do not have, or the people in the interior do not have. And there's a big difference right there, a very big difference. Then I want to jump over to, for instance, the Nana Delta and those areas down there, Mr. McDowell. Those people, believe me, they don't have that. I don't hear you saying what really is a fact when it comes to those people and their cost of living. I don't understand, for instance, just really easy, like Nenana and the rail belt that you've got, and you've got a differential there of three. And yet, one of them is further away than the other, you know, and it's just very inaccurate as far as I'm concerned. Because I've lived in those areas, I've been in school in those areas, I've had 30 years of experience in those areas, and I just those figures just do not come out correctly. As far as me living in those areas, the money that I know I had to spend for those things, the amount of gas I know I have to spend, and I know the schools especially with the fuel cost right now, it's totally, I just can't see the accuracy on it. The other thing is that that some of those schools that you visit, and I suppose you visit the railroad school board area, did you not?
No.
When you made the discrimination?
No.
You see. Well, I don't know how you came up with those figures, but this school is a very efficient school, and it seems to me like some of those figures you got out of there, you got them because of their efficiency in their system. Maybe if it would have been a little lax in their efficiency, this figure wouldn't have come out that way.
A good question. I think I'll go back to the first question because you brought up something that's important. What I said is historically they don't change a lot, but there are events that make them change. And we recommended looking at least every 5 years. Well, it's been 6 years, and I think it is time to look again. Things do change. There are more in different stores in Anchorage than there was. And so that might be self-serving professionally to say that, but I think that you need to look at it more than once a decade. Alaska is changing. We proved last time that it changed. So I'll agree that there could very well be changes between Anchorage and Fairbanks that haven't been measured. Secondly, on your point about efficiency, what we're really measuring here is difference in prices, not efficiency. If what we're saying, let's say for insurance, you measure the insurance rate for this kind of district, and it's the same for the rail butt as for Indiana. Or that, and so we're careful not to penalize, you know, obviously we saw from the financial records some districts were very prudent, very efficient, and other districts were obviously doing some things that could have saved a lot of money where they differ. So you weren't, it wasn't based on the volume of what you spent, it was based on the difference of the prices you had to pay. Now, if you chose to pay too high of a price, that's your problem. And or if you were extra good at getting a low price, that was good. But what we didn't either penalize or reward, we just said, here's what it does cost in these areas on average. I would say that the group that you're talking about, Sivan and Ann, the Rail Belt ones, so they took quite a hit, -6 and -9. One of the explanations for that is before they were lumped into a district that included primarily remote locations. And so they benefited from being classified with roadless locations where costs were extremely high. So historically, Nanan, the rail belt, had been getting a higher differential than you would expect. And when we looked at just the costs of places with road access, we found it to be lower than the rural locations. Another point that you made, which is a good one, is that I've spent my lifetime in Alaska, and I've lived in probably different communities, Haines, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Petersburg, etc. And retail prices are higher, let's say in this 14% in your little rail belt towns or in Nana, retail prices there are higher than 14%. The difference is in housing costs. Urban areas, housing cost per square foot tends to be a little higher. Rural areas where you don't have population increase in demand pushing those prices, and your real estate's cheap, your housing tends to be lower. So you have higher retail, lower housing, and the average is 14% more than Anchorage. But we're hit with the day-to-day, what we're conscious of is those day-to-day retail prices. I go into the store and I know that if I just drove 100 miles to Fairbanks, I'd get it for half price, and I have to put up with that day-to-day, and it's really noticeable. And my feeling in living in small towns is the same as, hey, it costs a lot more to live here daily, but I don't remember that my housing gain is probably lower in Nevada than it would be in Fairbanks. So I don't know, it doesn't answer all your questions, but I think excellent questions and things that we spent a lot of time thinking about. And like I say, that the research isn't perfect. There are places that probably still aren't getting a fair deal from this.
I'd like to continue.
Mr. Chairman, follow up on this. If I understand you correctly, you're saying it's actually cheaper as far as housing is concerned in the rural area than it is in the urban area?
It depends on which rural areas. The remote rural areas where you have extra high fuel costs and a shortage of good housing stocks and so forth, per square foot price is higher. But you know, you've seen how housing prices go up and down, like in Anchorage and Fairbanks, depending on economic conditions. And like in 1985 was a point in time when economic conditions were a certain way throughout the state. Those things change, and maybe today in Nanana, there's population moving in, and it doesn't take a lot of housing demand to jack those prices right up there. So that changes.
Continue.
Yeah, the reason I asked that, Ms. McDowell, because I think there's, here we're going with another inaccuracy. If I was to live in a house in my area, which would be the same looking house, same type of house, 15,000 square feet, let's say, 1,500 square feet, my house to get built in my area and in the area where I come from would cost about one and at least one and a half, almost one and a half times as much as that house would cost to build in the city. So I don't understand this thing where it's cheaper to live in the cheaper to have a house or to buy a house in the rural area than it is in the urban area.
It's not cheaper to buy a house,
build one,
or to build a brand new one. And like what we priced was what people actually paid. There's no other way to do it. We could either say, let's build everyone a new house, and in Point Barrow it costs four times as much to build it as it did in Fairbanks, so let's give you guys a salary four times as much. just doesn't work that way. It's based on how people actually live in these areas, and it's based on a per square foot price. I understand in rural areas, houses are a lot smaller than they are in Fairbanks, where they're really big. I think it was like 1,700 square feet is the average. It is big. And so we're not taking a big house compared to a small house. We're taking a single unit, a square foot of that house, and what does it cost compared to the other? It was a difficult thing to do, but it was about, it was the, probably the fairest measure.
Yes, please. I'm just trying to make a point, Mr. McDowell. So therefore, if we're talking about what you said, if I'm listening to you correctly, therefore, I might even lead back into efficiency, though, because we can't, in the areas where I live at, we can't afford those type of houses, maybe, correct? So we live in mobile homes. We live in double wide. We live in prefabs. But you see, Mr. McDowell, the reason we do that is because we can't afford anymore, so to speak. And so I'm saying that this is inaccurate because of the thing that we can't afford. You're saying, well, they can do without this. And so when we come to this little number, and that's what kind of reaction when we got to this change of number, it says that we don't need this. It's because it's penalizing we, the people in these areas, told the alterers, you know, these areas that we live in, and that's only because we cannot show that we can't, that we spend that kind of money, you know. In other words, we keep our prices on because we're forced to, not because we want to.
Thank you, Representative Charity.
I guess I'd like to get into a little different area, and that is the personnel cost one. And I'm curious as to, and I think I probably alluded to this earlier when we had you in the committee meeting before, but I'm curious if you would go and expand a little bit on if District A is careful in the way they negotiate and really works hard to negotiate and keep their costs of personnel down, District B, on the other hand, doesn't worry about that and just gives them whatever they want and says no big deal, and their costs continue to go up in personnel. Is District A going to be penalized for their, again, for their efficiency, if you will, versus District in this kind of a study? You're taking actual personnel costs of the districts regardless?
No, we don't use what's being paid to school personnel.
Oh, okay.
We use the difference in what it costs to operate a household in your area versus a household in Anchorage.
Oh.
And that doesn't have anything to do with what's being paid.
Okay.
I hope that's answered.
Well, so if I might follow that just a little bit, then if you pay your staff, if you underpay your staff, for the cost of living in an area, household cost, whatever, it doesn't. You can use some more money for something else because the formula is going to benefit you. And if you overpay them, then you're going to have to pay it out of some other source because this formula is not going to benefit you.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
One other. I'd like.
I
to
know
add.
That's very simplified, but.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. That's how it works. I'd like to mention one other thing, and sure you're well aware of this, but this is just the geographic cost differential, and it's not the foundation formula which compensates for the inefficiencies that rural districts have to operate under with the small buildings and the dispersed classes and administrators you need for small districts and so forth. And so over here you're compensated for those inefficiencies. I wish it was that way in terms of actual household payments where you could be compensated for some of what you're talking about, but our choice was either to measure what you did pay for housing or measure something that you didn't pay for housing, in which case we would have had to bring it up and build everyone a new house and compare that, and there was no way of doing that. The methodology is not perfect, but I think it was the fairest thing we could do.
Representative Lincoln.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can appreciate the fact that you don't want a study that has to be done year after year after year, that it should be something that could be held for 3 to 5 years at least. And when this study was done in 1988, the state of Alaska, and using 87, even 87, 88 figures, the state of Alaska at that time was on a decline in, for the economy. We had throughout the state a crash, and that is now pulling back out. The rentals, the cost of housing, transportation, all of that is now kind of leveling off in some areas and still climbing out in others. I look at these figures, and I believe that if we did another study today, they would be different than what we've got here. I too have somewhat of the same concerns as my colleague, Representative Gonzalez, on the rural differentials that you've got there. As an example, the on page 3 is the lower Kuskokwim, showing the 140 as the recommended differential to, say, lower Yukon of $1.37 or 137. And the lower Kuskokwim actually has better access in Bethel than would those villages that are in the lower Yukon because of the barging, the air transportation, and so forth. So those figures don't jive. But that's just two that I picked. I could pick any number of these. That of the 10 school districts that are in my district, which is 20% of all the school districts in the state, 8 of them have written stating that they are adamantly opposed to the figures that came out in this because they feel that there was more, the figures are not, doesn't portray what really is happening in rural areas, that there was more given to the living, the cost of living differential than there was to the true cost of the educational differential. The actual, what you had mentioned earlier on the travel especially was one of those areas that was of concern because of the cost of fuel now. And the textbooks, maintenance, personnel, all of that was not portrayed justly for the rural areas within the study. And so I kind of have to, I need to get more information from them, but I figure 8 out of 10 independently to come in, something is wrong. It really puts up a very bright red flag to me.
Well, I'm not a school administrator, and they're not cost researchers, so I could probably offer an opinion on how school districts are operated, but it may not be as accurate were I an expert in the area. But I think that I'll give you an example. Everybody buys their textbooks for the same place for the same price. The difference is in the shipping. And we costed exactly, we figured out how each district did their shipping and then costed that and compared it to Anchorage. So the cost of textbooks are high because per pound they're kind of expensive. And so, yes, it costs a lot to ship a bunch of textbooks out to these districts, but it really only adds a few percent to the price of those textbooks. A place that is underrated is in fuel costs. The effects of high fuel costs in the bush areas is phenomenal. Anchorage is so lucky to have what they've got in terms of their gas, fuel, and so forth. And that in just the fuel, the per square foot cost of heating school buildings out, and especially some of your areas, is like 3 and 4 times what it is in Anchorage, and that's built in to the differential. I also think that you know, we're trying to study all 55 districts, but each administrator is an expert in their specific district, and I'm certain that there are specific things that we may admit in each district, but we ask each district, and they all have very good cooperation, by the way, for all the districts, provided with the great detail on who they bought their stuff from and what prices they paid, and then we check back with each of those vendors and confirm what the latest prices were, how they shipped. And, for example, some people think it's wasteful to ship by air to some of these areas, but if you only got a barge once a year, air is how it is. And so we price air, and people have credit for shipping things in by air. A lot has been shipped in there. So I guess there's a lot of things there, insurance in the rural areas. You just get hammered on a per $1,000 rate, and that's included in there. The problem is comes in sometimes there's big differences between the non-personnel side, which are those costs I just discussed, and the personnel side. It might only be, say, 20% more to operate a household in some of these areas, but it might be 40% more to do the non-personnel costs for the schools. And so your average is that, and it comes down. And I think that if there's specific things we missed, like we missed an insurance one in Haines, and they didn't report what their insurance costs were, so we just assigned a value to that when they got their actual insurance costs and sent them to us, and it made a difference that he raised a point, as you can see there. But I guess I'm, like you, I'm acutely aware of a lot of the costs out there, and it was shocking to see what some of the prices that were paid had to be out there in those areas. But when you average everything out, and say it's only a few percent more on textbooks, but 40% more on fuel, it tends to level out there. I won't go ahead.
I'm going to let Representative Lincoln continue and then Representative Bay Davis.
I will just have one other question for right now. Just in continuing this, that as an example, that a year ago, the price of a ticket from Anchorage to St. Mary's was $300 and some. Today, that was a year ago. Today, that same ticket is $600 and some. It's almost double.
That
same
agree.
Ticket. We in one airline now instead of two. There's one airline, so we have no choice. I think that another thing that maybe things that were not taken into consideration, and I would like to see what, you know, the sample of the survey or the questions that you sent out, because some of those things, if they answered the pure question without giving thought to other considerations, that really has an impact, I think, are those like weather out in the rural areas. Certainly there's 40 below in other areas too, but when you don't have a maintenance person and something breaks down, the whole educational system is put in turmoil, because you either close the school down, you have to air ship something in immediately, you have to send in somebody to repair that, so that ticket that was costing now $300 for that maintenance person is now costing $600 and some. There's a lot of other things that I think have not been taken into consideration when we in coming up with these.
I agree with you. Transportation is one of those areas that have definitely changed. I mean, it is twice as expensive as 2 years ago to fly out to St. Mary's and other places. No question about it. That if this were redone today, that would make a difference. I agree. Things have changed.
Representative Bay Davis, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's pretty much what I wanted to address, and I did address it when the bill was introduced. I believe that I would prefer to base this concept on more recent figures. Now, this is a 1985 study. It's 6 years old, and I did ask the representative, and he says, well, this is better than what we had, and so therefore he's pushing the bill. I think it's not time to do that. It's not that I do not support the accuracy of your study. I believe that it's quite accurate. I just believe that it needs to have more updates and figures. And I do want to go on record that I do support the concept that we look at cost of education versus just the cost of living. I think that's a good way for us to go as policymakers. However, I don't have a whole lot of concern about administrators writing to say that, hey, this might not be what's happening, but be in their best interest, because anytime you make a decision that things are going to be different from what they were, particularly when it's going to cut down on monies in certain areas, somebody's going to write a letter and say that's not fair. It's for us to decide where the mechanism that was used were fair or not, and if there are things that need to be adjusted that you agree that you have looked at them and adjust them, then let's do that. But we can't base it on where this is accurate just because we get 7 or 8 letters from administrators, because I would see that almost any administrator would be protecting their turf, that they would write a letter saying that this is not in their best interest. However, if they can point out things that were not looked at, then that's where we come in and say, well, yeah, we'll take that into consideration. But my problem with supporting this bill is the fact that they're judging this on six-year-old figures, and I'm not supportive of that.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Eric, we have a couple of school superintendents in the audience that would like to say a few words. I'd like for you to stand by, if you would,
for
possible future questions. John Holt, would you like to step up and
if I could, I just have one comment. Is I among you, you immediately focused in on the most important issues in this research. One is its age. You know, I think it's far better than what you're going by now. There's far more injustices in the numbers you're using now than there is in these, and they're far more current. However, they are outdated. That's another issue. And I think the one that drives academicians nuts in the cost of living is the housing, as you touched on. And those are major issues for which there may never be the right answer. But I spent a lot of time on this type of research and a lot of time finding out what the major issues are, and it didn't take you guys very long at all to focus.
Well, as you wait in the audience, be thinking about what it would cost us to have it updated, would you? John, go ahead.
My name is John Holst. I'm the superintendent of schools in Craig, which is about 50 miles from Ketchikan. And previous to my going there this past summer, I was a line administrator in Ketchikan for 10 years, living there for 10 years. I have a real good
guess. That means he was the high school principal for the last several of those.
Last five of those. At any rate, Sherry is very well aware of the cost of living in Ketchikan. I think that the only areas that I would disagree with Mr. McDowell are that one specific one, that Ketchikan is on the same basis as Anchorage. And I think that Mr. Feinstein, following me, will talk a lot about that issue, because he has a lot more data. But my own personal experience is the price of almost everything is higher in Ketchikan than it is in Anchorage. And so if there are a one, that'd be hard to imagine. Then looking at Craig, which is at 1.03, to say that there is only a 3% difference between Craig and Ketchikan is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, it isn't even close to reality. Everything that comes to us goes through Ketchikan. Everything. There is one barge company that ships directly, but they're more expensive than the barge line that ships through Ketchikan, including the additional cost of bringing materials in. I fished for a number of years with my son on a troller, and which was a nice thing. I got to spend some real time with my son for a couple months this summer. We'd fill up our boat with a diesel fuel in Ketchikan and pay about, as I recall, it was like 75 cents a gallon for diesel fuel. And then we would go around the island, and before we start fishing, because it was a 24-hour trip, we'd have to fill up the fuel again. And we would pay, at that time, it was 15 cents a gallon higher. So it was between 75 and 90 cents. So that's about 20 to 25% higher. It was the same company, White Pass Alaska, in both communities. But because there was no competition in Craig, the only provider, the price was that much higher. And that is real pervasive. I mean, we have a lot of services in Craig that haven't been there previously, but they're one of a kind. Very little competition. Milk prices, you know, if we want to buy cartons of milk for the lunch program, you know, it's 25% higher because it's a perishable commodity. I guess the bottom line is that there is a significant difference between Craig and Ketchikan, and I'd submit there's a considerable difference between Ketchikan and Anchorage. And we're operating on a 3% difference from Anchorage right now. And I would say that we're much closer to something that Nanana has listed at presently. But I would also argue that the figures that Mr. McDowell is providing are a lot more accurate than what you're using presently. I feel sorry for him sitting here. You know, there's always that urge to shoot the messenger.
Well, we can leave it the same then, if you want.
No, I'd prefer not. I think that we do have to bring some realism to this. Is along with, I mean, this is only one part of the funding mechanism. I've talked to almost everyone at this table already about single site, dual site. You know, we're the classic case. I'm in the process of building a budget right now, and I have numbers in my head. You know, $1.9 million total budget. Only $400,000 of that $1.9 million is going to be in non-salaried items. That's 21%. 79% are in salaried items, salary and fringe benefits. So the numbers of 55 and 45% in Craig don't apply. But that's another issue. That's a funding issue. At $6,100 a student is not adequate. At any rate, I'd answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee?
Hear, hear.
More money.
Thank you, John.
I think the 1.08 is far more accurate than the 1.3. It's low, if anything. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Bob Weinstein, would you please come forward?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Weinstein. I'm superintendent of Southeast Island School District, which is the REAA for Southern Southeast. We have 19 communities in which we have schools, and then up on the Canadian border, we bus kids into Canada from Hyder. The Erie differential is an issue which has been of concern to our school district for some time, especially since the adoption of what we currently have in statute. I'm not here to take a lot of your time, but I will say that all data that we have, that the Department of Labor publishes, and so on, indicates that the cost of doing business and cost of living in Southern Southeast is higher than what is currently provided for in statute. And while I have no knowledge and no opinion, therefore, on what the situation is in various other parts of the state, I would certainly urge you to give some consideration to approaching some changes on a regional basis, if for no other reason, to correct some injustices while you're still looking at some data for places where you feel the current data would indicate a change is needed or not needed as proposed in the current legislation. One of the concerns that I think you should have as state policymakers, which I'll bring up, is that currently the state receives many millions of dollars, I think 20 to 30 million this year of PL874 money, which is deducted from state aid. The reason it can be deducted from state aid is because the federal government assumes that the area cost differentials, among other parts of the foundation formula, are accurate in representing the different costs of doing business around the state. And I would urge you to expedite whatever changes or new studies or whatever you feel you need to do before somebody, perhaps in a school district or somebody else, challenges the state's deduction on the basis of area differentials. I think, from what I've heard, there's nobody in this room who agrees that the current area differentials are accurate in reflecting the cost of doing business, and I think we could certainly find some expert testimony to that effect. So I guess from a different perspective, to make sure that that current deduction is not lost, you need to correct those inequities. From a personal school district standpoint, I feel that what Mr. McDowell has done approaches what the differential for our area is. The data for our school district in his study was 1.11 of the base. He has recommended a regional differential of 1.08. That makes sense to me, even though it's not necessarily in our school district's exact interest, if you will, to avoid some of the situations where currently we have districts side by side with some radically different differentials. And we do in Southeast. We have 1.03 in Craig. We're 1.04. Another district up the road is 1.05. And there's really no data reason for that. So again, I would suggest that you give some consideration to looking at least Southeast Alaska, if not other portions of the state, on some kind of a regional basis when you're making your decisions.
Thank you. Committee questions? Thank you very much, Bob. That wanted to speak. Thank you. I thought perhaps committee members might have more questions for you. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I do have a couple. I was going to catch you on the side, but I'll ask them in front of everybody so they can have answers as well if you know. Are there any other states that have a situation in any of their funding for schools that is similar to what we do with this area differential business?
I'm not completely familiar. I know that both Florida and Michigan attempt to assign different cost differentials to their districts. But when we researched the literature on this, the type of research that was done to create those differentials, it was not something we really use. But yes, other states do attempt this.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, I guess the second question I had, I know you alluded to this, the housing seems to be always such a big thing, both because it affects the formula so much, or affects this process so much, and because, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of brains to figure out that if I go to a smaller community than my own, and somebody's living in a much, you know, a house that doesn't even compare remotely with most of the houses in my community, while the house may cost more out there, it isn't necessarily worth as much. And those issues kind of weigh back and forth. I look at it in the sense of property taxes. For instance, my sister recently moved to the Anchorage area from Sitka, and I live in Ketchikan, so I'm familiar with Sitka and Ketchikan, what property costs and what the house sizes are and that sort of thing. Go up to Eagle River where she lives, and all of the houses, they don't cost as much, but they are huge and nice compared to the houses in my area for the most part. And that's a similar house to the one that she's paying $140,000 for in Eagle River. In Ketchikan would probably cost closer to $200,000+ or more. And I wonder how, if there's any way, in any kind of a different way you can look at housing, what it's actually worth in the area that it is versus, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I understand. Believe me, there are many, many hours and days to spend on this issue. To answer your question, the example you gave, remember, we measure on a unit basis. I mean, we go into the grocery store and we don't compare 5 pounds of butter to 1 pound of butter.
Mm-hmm.
It's pound for pound. Square foot for square foot is mm-hmm. the basis for housing. All costs included,
okay.
Heat, lights, sewer, water, whatever, everything having to do with housing is a per square foot cost. So the same house, you would receive a higher differential for Ketchikan if on a per square foot basis, your house, whether it was bigger, smaller, nicer, or worse, cost more, you would receive that differential.
Okay.
The same thing in mind. In the rural areas, there's kind of a compensating factor. I've been there. We've done a lot of village work in our careers, and I know what it's like. I've stayed in many houses out in the rural areas. And you have a house which itself, your payment might not be real high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's small. But you pay through the nose for lights. It's $300, $400 electric bill in Puna, for example. You pay through the nose for fuel, $500 to heat your house. So even though your mortgage payment might only be $300 compared to the guy in $1,000 payment in Anchorage, you've got $700 more worth of utility costs than he does. And so on a per square foot basis for your smaller house, you are paying more and you get a higher differential as a result. Here's another thing. One of the things that the biggest difference is food. Rural areas is high, no question. And we go into those stores and we price this can of tomatoes and that pound of butter and compare it, and it really shocks you. I think it's 80-90% in barrel, and it's 40-50 easily in many areas. And people in rural areas, because they have less income, spend more of their income on food. So we assign a higher weight to that. And so actually you end up, your overall differential is a little higher because you need to spend more money on food. It's the way it's weighted. So if you have a 50% difference in food cost and only a 20% difference in housing costs, your differential compensates for that, and you get a higher differential because you're forced to pay more for food. That's kind of how it works. There's no perfect way to do it, but we felt that we couldn't do it any other way than to measure what you pay for housing, because otherwise we'd have to measure what you don't pay for housing.
Sure. Well, I think we need to adjourn the meeting at 12 o'clock, and committee members have other appointments. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you very much. Do you have a comment, John?
Oh, well, yeah, I just want to comment, you know, what I was arguing about earlier, Mr. McDowell, and the pitch, like, you agree with me, but you see, the only thing that worries me is that we've got this in writing, and we're sitting there talking to the court, hopefully we do something about it. But you're right in all those things that you say. It does cost more, but if you notice one thing, that it costs more in those little areas of everything. You know, the other thing that I think you and I don't agree on is the fact that through no fault of the people that live on the outside areas, because they live in smaller houses and those little things which they can't afford, that actually this paperwork that we've done here has really kind of penalized them for not being able to live in those areas, you know, and those nice houses, those big houses, and that kind of thing.
I agree that housing is difficult to measure. I don't agree that there's unfairness for rural areas built into housing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.